This podcast is brought to you by The Province.
The Province Sports Podcast.
The podcast for Thursday afternoon here on Province Radio. We have done it again. We have managed to convince Jason Botchford. Province hockey writer, a return appearance to the podcast. And I got to say, I'm a little angry today.
Oh, wow. Was it because iMac put his arm around you last night?
Well, there was that. I mean, you should have heard the things I wanted to get out, but...
They wouldn't let you speak. No.
So, yeah, I'm angry, but that's not necessarily why I'm angry.
Saw that gif.
It's the podcast. I should be excited. What was that? But I thought that the podcast was going to be the most anticipated debut in Vancouver here in 2016.
Yeah, I think for podcasting, it is the number one podcast.
Yeah, but then along comes Nikita Tramkin and just steals my thunder.
Yeah.
The build-up for this debut. The
place was packed. Fans were there early. Saw a lot of Tramkin jerseys.
No, you didn't. You saw a few, though. There were some people that shelled out.
Yep.
And then 12 seconds. We got 12 seconds on that initial shift.
What a shift, though.
For the big Russian.
No one got by him.
No.
That was pretty good. No one got by him.
There seemed to be some shift. There was panic in his face, though.
Yeah.
As he got 6 seconds into the shift, he got as far as he got away from the bench. So it was 6 seconds. And then in full retreat, just hustled back. And
yeah.
That was it. But what a
reward. On the face, though, you never see. I mean, it never changes, right? I mean, he's there's some Chris Tanev in that guy, but clearly he didn't know often where he was supposed to go or what he was supposed to be doing. And I don't want to be too hard on the guy.
No.
I mean, he did bring his knees together to stop once, but, you know, hey, that's nitpicking.
It is pretty funny, though, and it tells us an awful lot about this season, where it's gone, the lack of excitement, the lack of, you know, selling points from the organization standpoint, that you can airlift this 6'7" guy in, and for a week, I mean, there was some real intrigue that we just haven't seen in this city in a long time about one player.
Well, and a defensive shutdown defenseman who's, you know, normally that's not what we see in Vancouver. No, normally guys like that don't get the hype, but look, I mean, you're that tall, you're potentially that intimidating, that's pretty enticing, and it does go to show how this season has gone. For the team, but it's all we got, you know? I mean, we don't have a lot.
We don't.
We got the big Russian. That's what we got.
You got 13 games left to, you know, chew this team up, spit it out, and then we'll be at, I guess, into nonstop draft talk and draft coverage.
Yeah, speaking of chewing up the team, the coach has been all over these guys lately, eh?
Well, and I want to
get to... No breaks for the young guys.
There's lots to get to there, right? I want it, but before we leave Tramkin for a sec... You missed Monday's practice, the bag skate.
Right.
Or Tuesday's practice, yes.
Yes, I did. The controversial bag skate.
Yeah, and I mean, I've seen a lot worse in terms of coaches making the players skate.
Right.
But I have never, in my 15 years covering the Vancouver, I've never seen one player's reaction to being skated the way that Tramkin was down on all fours, huffing and puffing. I was worried. Yeah. I was worried about this guy. In the immediate aftermath of, and it wasn't so much laps of the ice as it was just up and back, but 4 or 5 times, and there he is down on all fours, just gasping, wheezing, couldn't get his breath, and then the coach blows the whistle, practice is done, the players all go to center ice, do a little stretch, and again, as most of the players are stretching, here's Tramkin. You know, just struggling to catch his breath.
Can't even stretch.
Yeah, conditioning may be a little bit of an issue, and we'll have to watch moving forward. But if you are the Canucks, do you give him a run of games here? I mean, we're not going to base our opinion. We're not going to write the book on this guy on one game. He's here now. He's on the scene. He's got the number 88. He's ready to go. Do you just run him out there for a bunch of games now to see what you've got?
Yeah, I don't think you play him in back-to-backs, but I think that you plot out a strategy where he plays maybe half the games, maybe a little bit more than half. I don't think it's a great idea playing with Panan. I would tend to, you know, protect him maybe with a guy like Ham Hughes, who had a pretty good game last night. I think he'd be better off in that situation. Cause there are times, like I thought that there, he had some moments. He had made some nice outlet passes. His reach camp came in handy a couple of times. He never really got beat wide. And that's something that, that you kind of worried about. But that said, obviously, yeah, I was super worried when I heard the stories about the skate, how he was going to survive an NHL game, because even like 5-6 shifts in a game are pretty, can be pretty grueling. And if you're not built to last, the game is brutal to you and, really cruel and can expose some things that probably right now, you know, no one wants to see this guy put in a situation where he makes huge mistakes and everyone's criticizing them and they're losing faith in Tramkin. So I tend to protect him a bit. I'd play him probably in you know, with Ham Hughes, and I'd play him right around what he played last night, which was like 11 minutes.
All right, now back this bus up a sec, because you're saying don't play him in back-to-back games. Yeah. So it sounds like you've got the Tram plan already in place.
That's
now,
right.
How many plans can you have as a hockey team? We've already got the McCann plan.
That's right.
And we found out that that's now pretty much out the window.
Well, that's taken a big U-turn here, Jeff. I think both the McCann plan and the Vertanen plan have both kind of gone off the rails here with these guys. And I'm not sure if it was the Bieber effect or not, but you were with me today when I asked the coach to clarify when he kept talking about mistakes. In fact, today he said that he was thinking about scratching these guys and keeping them out of the lineup and thinking if that was the proper way to send a message to his younger players. And I'm pretty sure we all knew he was talking about McCann and Vertanen, because the night before he was talking specifically about McCann and Vertanen and their mistakes. So I said, like, you know, are these mistakes on the ice? And it was a pretty simple out. And he could have said, yeah, on the ice. And in fact, and quite mysteriously, he chose not to and just said all. Which was pretty much, I took to mean off the ice, on the ice, all situations.
Yeah. So what exactly went down at the Biebs concert? Jake's front and center. He's got the pictures posted on social media. Do we know for a fact that McCann was part of all of this that went on the weekend?
Well, I'm not sure. I think a lot of people are just jumping to the assumption that it is the Bieber night. And maybe there was, I don't know for sure that there was off-ice shenanigans going on. I am led to believe that if there were off-ice shenanigans, it may not just be a Bieber night. You know, they won the game Saturday. People could have been happy. Things could have happened then as well. So I don't think you can necessarily draw the direct route from Bieber to the situation we're in now. But it's definitely something that needs to be talked about because of the photos. Now, I don't have a big deal with a guy having a good time and, you know,
a teenage guy, yeah, right, no, in his wheelhouse, like, there in that age group.
And in a brutal month, you know, in a really horrific month for everyone, where you, like, I get concerned about the psychology or psychological impact of all this losing will have on their youngest players, their bright lights, guys like Vertanen and McCann, and they need outlets at times. And I think as a coach, as an organization, you have to understand that, and you have to be able to say, okay, we need these guys to have fun. What we also need to create boundaries. I'm not sure if they've crossed any boundaries, but I do know a few photos. I don't care what time that they were posted on Instagram of Vertanen having a good time with Bieber. Good for him, man. Like that's what he should be doing. He should be having some fun. No one else on that team is. I'll tell you, like, Emerson Needham's not having any fun.
Just the very fact that you and I are sitting here recording a podcast. And Justin Bieber has now become like a central figure in this Vancouver Canucks season that has just been flushed down the toilet. Like, you can't make this kind of stuff up.
Yeah, a big 6-foot Russian who may or may not be able to skate real well, and Justin Bieber. But what else do we have? There's not a lot.
Well, what do the Canucks have in Jared McCann? I think that's becoming a question now. When you look at those first 9 games and 5 goals, and this guy, it was like he arrived, shot out of a cannon. Since then, it's been a struggle. It was a struggle in the first half for Jake Vertanen. He's figured things out and has been one of the good news stories in the second half of the season. But as Vertanen has sort of gained a foothold in the National Hockey League, McCann really has slipped back just in terms of his ability to compete on a nightly basis, given his size and his stature. The offense is all but dried up. What do you make of Jared McCann's first go-round of the National Hockey League? Big picture stuff here. What do you see? Where where does this guy slot into to their plans moving forward?
Yeah, I want to touch on Vertanen. I'm actually kind of relieved if it is off ice things that the coach has been talking about, mistakes, because on the ice, like, I think it really irks me that people are questioning the way that he's played on the ice. And yeah, he's made some mistakes, but in the second half of the season from the World Juniors on, I think he's arguably been one of their best and most consistent players. Like, yeah, he had some issues playing with the Twins. Lots of guys have had issues playing with the Twins. Yannick Hansen, when he first got brought up for those playoff games back in 2007 and had to play with the Twins, had some issues with the Twins. It happens. It's not easy. It's especially not easy for a guy who's been wired like Vertanen has been, which is go out and hit guys, make an impact physically, play well defensively. That doesn't always fit in with what the Twins are trying to do. So part of me is relieved. Okay, maybe it is off ice issues. Maybe the coach isn't crazy. And maybe some members of the media are, who are questioning his focus and commitment, because the guy, it's there. He's done it on the ice without question. On McCann, I think they've lost him. I don't think the McCann plan has worked. I think that there were opportunities when he was playing well, like he did just before the Christmas break with Daniel Sedin, to take it and run with him, give him more chances to play with really good players. Instead, they kind of spot started him. And then when they did put him in, he was in really tough spots. He was in fourth line duty. He was playing with guys like Dorsett, who's had a really brutal year. There wasn't a lot of chance for him to take advantage of one of the best things that we've seen since he's arrived, and that's that shot, getting that shot off, putting him in situations where he can score goals. And after he scored a bunch to start the year, they've kind of gone away from that and restricted his chances to do it again and do it again. I think he's lost confidence. I think they've lost confidence in him. I think obviously his face-off performance has been a shit show, for lack of a better word. It hasn't gone well. I can understand the argument that maybe he's better on the wing, where he can take advantage of him flying down the wing, top of the circle, he unleashes the wrist shot, because it's really good. I think he would be better served right now, maybe in junior. You know, I could see that point being made, and definitely next year, I think, in the AHL. I think he needs a year to get stronger, get used to the pro game, all of those things. But right now, the second half of this year, Jeff, they've lost them.
Yeah. You know, again, not to get too deep on the faceoffs here, but when a guy goes 0-10 on any night in the National Hockey League, it's going to jump off the stats page. It did. So I know that it's been a struggle for him, but I just wanted to look, because at different times throughout the season, I've sort of been charting where Jared McCann is in relation to the rest of the National Hockey League. But of all the guys in the league who've taken 500 or more faceoffs this year, he's dead last. I think there's 105 guys.
Right.
But I went further last night. Since the lost season, so go back to 2005, 2006, any guy that's taken 500 faceoffs in a season, Jared McCann is dead last in terms of percentage in the last 10 years. In the National Hockey League. Yeah. That's the struggle it's been. Now, in his defense, I also looked at this. There's 105 guys this year, I think, that have taken 500 faceoffs or more. Only four are rookies. So, right. You know, he's really being put right. in That's a tough right. spot. I mean, Jack Eichel, I think he's at 41%. Like, he's struggling too. Wonder Boy in Buffalo, who really can do no wrong for the most part, he's not sure. doing very well in the faceoff. You're getting thrown to the wolves, the big boys. That's where they live in the National Hockey League, in the faceoff circle. And so, I mean, there's just no doubt that Jared McCann, he's got to get bigger. He's got to get stronger. And he will. He's 19 years of age. I mean, I'm not throwing this guy out. I'm not writing him off as National Hockey League.
I don't think anyone, and you can't, no one can do that.
But I mean, just putting that sort of in historic context right now, I mean, so that just makes me wonder, you know, maybe it's time for the final 13 games. Don't let him take a face-off. I mean, maybe you shield him, put him on the wing, leave him on the wing, because whatever you're doing when you put him in the face-off circle, it's just not happening for Jared McCann.
Yeah, and maybe, like, two things strike me when you talk about the numbers there, is what a year Horvat had last year as a rookie in the dot, and this year, it's kind of remarkable that McCann's been able to hold water, keep his head above water possession-wise, despite losing all these face-offs. And I know that there's not a direct link between face-offs and possession, but still, considering who he's played with, considering the situations he's been in, I think overall it's been a pretty productive and good year. I've been impressed with him in stretches. I just wish he had been given the opportunity to get a ton of power play time and to play, like those situations when Henrik was out, to play with Daniel. I don't know what the team had to lose by playing him with a really good offensive offensive guy, and like Daniel Sedin, when they did show a lot of chemistry right before the Christmas break.
If you're Willie DeJardin, you got 13 games left here. You got all these young guys. Your hands are tied with the injuries. What do you want to see? And you mentioned some guys like Edom and Vey who have been here now for a while. Gonce and Grenier are up, and they're getting an opportunity. And who knows if they stay the duration or if they're back on that Utica shuttle. But what's going to excite Jason Botchford over these final 13
games? I think that Willie is an interesting topic, super interesting to me. I think that what we're seeing right now is kind of a change in course from what we've seen previously. Certainly, we never saw a real critical Willie DeJardin last year at all. Like, the guy was from the school of Montessori. Like, everyone got positive reinforcement. Everyone was good or real good, and he had that scale. I haven't heard him say his kind of slogan, real good, in literally months.
Because nothing's been.
That's right.
Nothing's been real good.
At least he can see that. But not even Berchi, who has been real good, has gotten that elicited for that kind of quote from the coach. This is a tougher kind of something's happened here, because he's been a lot tougher the past few days than I've ever seen him before. He's been more critical than I've ever seen him before. And I wonder if he's kind of setting the tone for next year, the expectations that are going to be for next year, and kind of trying to rein in what's happening with, especially with his youngest players, and trying to impose more of his will, which is bizarre because that's not really been Willie before. Willie before is roll four lines, let him go, let him play, and don't get in anyone's face too much. And I think that kind of strategy has cost them at points this year. I think the fact that they haven't been able to win three straight wins as part of that, and he keeps saying that they're complacent in these games, which is bizarre. But it's made Willie a better interview, I think. But is he a better coach? Like, do you see improvement from this head coach over the course of this year? And are you confident right now that he's going to be able to get the most out of this group next year if he comes back?
Tough Love Willie, TLW. I think we've got a new nickname for him here. But, I mean, you're right. It went back to the game day in Winnipeg and the morning skate. And, I just found that whole thing curious, too, that he comes out after the game when they had their lunch fed to them and said, well, I knew I could see it coming.
Yeah, right.
Well, if you could see it coming and you're the coach, do something about it. So that was bizarre. And then post-game, last night against Colorado, he comes out with this revelation that the organization was close to giving up on Sven Berchi not that long ago, and now Sven Berchi is probably their best player moving forward.
That's right. What does that say about the organization? That doesn't say great things.
Some mixed messages.
But yeah, I think Berchi is the real feel-good story of this season, and there have been at points others.
Ben Hutton,
and I think Markstrom. But no one has progressed from the beginning of the year to now like Berchi has. And Willie talked about it. He is a totally different player. Like, he's a puck hound. You can see it on the ice. He wants the puck. I'm just not like the challenge is, how do you teach that? How do you get Edom to play like that? How do you get Vey to play like that? How do you get other guys to play like that? Because it's not size, J-Pat.
Yep.
He doesn't have the size. You see him. He's got, the small chest, small arms, but he looks like a machine out there running through the Colorado Avalanche.
Well, and it's funny. I mean, it's one goal in a long season, and yet the goal that he scored against Nashville on the weekend, it stood apart from pretty much everything else that he's done. Fights his way to the front of the net, shakes off Shea Weber. He's wearing Shea Weber like a sweater.
Yeah.
This is, again, Sven Berchi, not supposed to win those one-on-one battles. I have to say that Shea Weber didn't really seem all that into that game on Saturday night. But still, that's nothing to take anything away from Sven Berchi. To the front of the net, beats Weber, reads the play, the rebound off the end boards, and is there to shovel home a rebound. I mean, that's just a goal that this guy was not scoring before Christmas.
Yeah, and who could have guessed that, like, now in March, we will look back on the season and think, damn, the Canucks, what they really needed most was more Sven Berchis. That's what they were lacking this year the whole time.
That's going to be the marketing slogan for next year. More Sven
Berchis. He's a good guy to build maybe a marketing, we're hyping him up, and he may not even get to 20 goals this year, which is, again, kind of a symptom of how bad this season has been. When that's your brightest light, a guy who may end up the season with 17, 18 goals. But there haven't been a lot. There haven't been a lot of guys that have punched above their weight. Now, is that coaching? Is that the players? And if you determine that is coaching, should the coach be back next year?
Yeah, and I mean, the coach has the vote of confidence. I know you wrote about it in the Provies that that's not set in stone and things can change again. I mean, there's 13 games sure. to go plus a summer, and you know, you never know who's on the market. I mean, they've got Travis Green down on the farm. Where do you stand on the Travis Green situation? Again, this is a guy that hasn't coached the National Hockey League yet either. Is he the next great thing?
Well, I'm not sure great, because Ben Hutton went and played 4 games for him and then was, they ejected him right out of there. And I think that they could have used, you know, that was a team that struggled to score goals, and Hutton's been proven to be a pretty good player overall. I think phenomenal rookie year for a guy with his experience, and really good at walking the line, playing the power play. He's been effective at getting the shot through. Yeah, he's got some growing there to do, but you can see the potential. So I look at Travis Green and I wonder, you know, why wasn't Ben Hutton good enough to be on your team? But he certainly was right on Berchi. And when I listened to Willie say there was guys in the organization who believed in Berchi through his struggles in the first half of the season, I think immediately of Travis Green. I do think that he's going to be a head coach very soon. I'm not sure if he's going to be a great head coach or not, but he's got a ton out of that Utica team, got a ton out of them last year, got a ton out of them this year. They don't really have a number one center. He's done big things with an AHL team that is not very good, not very loaded with talent. So I'm encouraged by what I've seen from Travis, and I do have a hunch that if they do bring Willie back, Travis will be, like, I think he's going to get a job. I think that there's going to be enough.
Get a job in the organization?
No, in the NHL. In the NHL. I think he wants a head coach job or bust.
It's interesting that, I mean, you're right. On the surface, you see what Ben Hutton has become here in the NHL in a rookie season, and you think this guy couldn't have played more than 4 games in Utica. Now, remember, that was a good Utica team that got on a long playoff run, and so perhaps they didn't want to, you know, disrupt the apple cart, if you will. And, you know, coaches are loyal to the guys, I guess, that have got them that far. But it does seem crazy to see how well Ben Hutton has adjusted at the National Hockey League level that they couldn't have found a way.
Yeah, I mean, Corrado got hurt and missed 4 or 5 games. I mean, there was opportunities to get him there to see what he can do. And they obviously didn't think that he was up for it. And does that, are we nearing the end of the podcast here? How do you know when, cause I want to get some off Canucks talk. Like I feel like in a podcast or a podcast, you have to end it with like off topic.
Right. What did topics. We do? The last time you were in, and it seems like a lifetime ago now, was,
what did we talk about?
Retro jerseys. Remember,
that's right.
It was before the Canucks and the Leafs and the retro jerseys.
Well, and now the top of mind is the Fanatics, the fan Fanatics thing that the Canucks did. The Clapper was in town. There seems to be a controversy about the goalie guys.
Yeah.
You do not remember the goalie guys?
No, I remember the goalie guys.
Oh, okay.
But in my mind, I remember the goalie guy. I don't remember it being a
duo.
Oh,
yeah, there was two.
There were two?
Yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah. It was like
I just remember the star of the show. Then the other guy must have been the sort of,
Now, should the Clapper be back, do you think, full time?
I did.
Once a week,
full
maybe?
Full time, no.
What,
no,
not every game?
No.
It was amazing.
It was. I missed the amazing part.
The crowd was it's the loudest I've heard that crowd in a month.
Right,
you
but
acknowledge
again,
that.
Remember, yeah, but keep the baselines in mind here. When we're talking about loud crowds at Rogers Arena.
And controversial, he had Trump emblazoned across
political.
His underwear.
Didn't see that coming.
That
I did
was
not
pretty
see
good.
The Clapper.
It's a lot of entertainment for a Canucks game to have a guy like that.
And then Johnny Canuck was there. But the green men were honored on the Jumbotron only. Where in the world are the green guys?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Let's not spend too much time wondering and worrying about that.
Right. All right.
But it did seem, I mean, they've done a lot of good nights in there, reflecting on 20 years of Rogers Arena.
Yeah.
It seemed like, obviously, in the marketing meetings, they got 17, 18, and we need two more.
What are we going to do?
Well,
let's bring back all
the fans.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Which fans? And then,
I would have been okay if it was just like time. Like I'm that into the class. I can't even believe it. But I'm into the mysterious mustached man, the Clapper. Like I think he's got the right look. He's got the right style.
The right look. There's a right look for a Clapper.
There is. I really believe there is. And the other thing I got to get to the bottom of: why did IMAC have his arm around? What was the? I saw the GIF. So it's going viral. What happened there?
Well, I think
you're on Sportsnet.
He was reaching out sort of as a goodwill gesture because he was a camera hog, plain and simple.
Oh, and he admitted it on the air?
No.
Oh, okay.
But Murph asked him a question, and he played keep away, basically. He was trying to freeze me out.
Right.
Like, here I am trying to scratch and claw my way back into the industry and, you know, find a footing, find a place for me in this world, but.
That's right.
And Sportsnet rolls out the welcome ad. I get an opportunity here. That's on TV and IMAC just shut me down. Like, he played the role of the veteran guy. Like, you know, who's this guy that's sort of crowding, you know, creeping into my space? Maybe Valky doesn't threaten him. I don't know what it was. He wouldn't let me speak. The guy wouldn't let me talk. I had so many things I wanted to get off my chest, and he wouldn't let me talk. So that's the beauty of the podcast. I can, you know.
Talk, say what you want.
Yeah.
And so that happened, and the Canucks kept you out of the town hall meetings. They said no media there, which I found odd.
So did I, especially in this day and age where so many people in advance were saying, I'm going to this thing. I'm going to be on the inside. I'm going to tweet out whatever it's, you know, whatever said.
Right. Like, they're going to keep it from getting out.
Yeah. And so
the information's going
to
get out.
You know, the province asked me to go and cover this thing and originally asked to be in the room. And the Canucks said, no, not so much. That this is a, you know, it's a season ticket holder. It's a private function, essentially, with their...
Yeah, but I covered the Summer Summit.
Right, but I think that out different? Of the Summer Summit, I think they made some changes to the policy. I think that's how it went
Too
down.
Too much tan beer.
Yeah, exactly. So, no, this time they said, private function, and I, you know, that part I get, and I knew that some people on the inside were going to be tweeting out the juicy parts anyhow.
And they did.
So the info was going to get out, but I thought, you know, again... There's interest in this hockey team. There's interest in any time that Trevor Linden and Jim Benning speak to their constituents. And so I just, can I sit at the back of the room? No, that can't happen. And I said, okay, well, the province has asked me to, at the very least, cover this on the outside of the building.
Right.
I'll stand on the sidewalk and talk to some of these people as they exit the building.
That's real journalism. That's what you do.
Happens.
It does.
On occasion.
That's what you got to do. That is
7:30 in the morning. and the Canucks thought that that was a little odd that, you know, after basically saying that this is a closed event, that I would
maybe
show up
shouldn't
on the,
be there.
Yeah. So
here's what I found the great irony about that is that there actually was among the fans that were there a lot of positive feelings about what the Canucks were saying and what the Canucks were presenting. And actually, it ended up kind of costing them what could have been, you know, more of a feel good situation, because I think the tone of those town halls, that they were sending the right message. They were giving a lot of the message that Trevor was giving was the message that a lot of the fans had been hungry for and starving for. And what I heard is when you talk to people on the street, that they were really positive
about
it. Well,
that was the sort of the irony in all of this.
Yeah.
And maybe if there's a lesson that the organization could learn was, you know, I asked people as they came out, hey, you know, do you mind talking? Will you talk to us? I mean, I gave them opportunity. Lots of people said, no, I'm busy. I got to go. But the ones I talked to, I asked, what was the mood like in the room? Most of them said pretty positive. And remember, this is the week of the trade deadline.
Right.
Trade deadline was Monday. This is happening on the Friday
morning.
Fresh
wounds still.
Yeah. And, I mean, the temperature was running pretty hot in this city.
Man.
And so I asked people about the mood in the room and, you know, the message that was conveyed. And you're spot on. The people that we talked to, and the video is still up at the province website, people can see, you know, they said, no, just the opportunity to ask these questions to the leadership group, to hear in their own words, because I think that there's this trust or mistrust factor, you know, and there were a lot of stories swirling around the trade deadline of what exactly happened, and it was being reported here, and it's being reported back east, and, you know, where is the truth? We got to get to the truth. And so I think for, you know, season ticket holders or season ticket members, as they like to call them.
Oh, they are members?
Changed. I don't know. Somewhere along the line, that's changed. I grew up, they were always season ticket holders. But
now they're members.
They're members. membership has its privileges.
What a club.
You know, to be able to hear it, to ask the questions, to pose the questions directly to Trevor Linden and Jim Benning, and to hear in their own words, I think allayed the fears of some of these people.
Sure.
And so, yeah, the people that we ended up interviewing out on the streets were pretty positive about the whole experience, and yet... You know, I somehow was made out to be the bad guy in all this. I'm not the bad guy.
No.
Except when I'm on the Sportsnet panel.
Man.
Then I'm the bad guy.
Tough.
It won't let me talk. Yeah.
And what, and in those, you know, and you're renowned for your post games with Willie. I have a tough time getting up for those situations. Can you get, like, you were away, I think, and they were mad at me that I didn't go down there. And they're like, you only show up when J-Pat's there. And I'm like, guys, I need some nights off. Like, how many questions can I ask this guy?
That's it for another podcast here this week on Province Radio. Thanks so much for listening. We'll do it again in 1 week's time.